Yes, welcome everyone, one and all, ladies and gentlemen, to the insert name of podcast here. I'm your host, James Prendergast, and my co-host is Taylor Boone. We're going to be talking about various video game discussions, technologies, I don't know, anything and everything. It's all on the table. So I thought we might start off with a good topic. I was like, where have we got into gaming? Like, what was it for us that pushed us through that casual barrier into becoming, you know, proper gamers, as it were? So I don't know if you want to go first, Taylor.
Sure. I don't think we had casual gamers back when I got started. It was, you were either, because it was all hardcore, right? I mean, it was back in the early days of personal computing, and so you really had to want to game in order to, you had to want to use a computer in the first place, right? They weren't ubiquitous by any means, and then to go the extra mile to game on a computer was just that, an extra mile, and finding games was difficult, and information about games was difficult, and so I think if you were gaming back in the early 80s, back when I really got started, it was all hardcore.
Sorry, is this back in the days when you had tape decks and stuff like that?
Yeah, tape drives, and I had a cassette drive. My first real gaming computer was a VIC-20, had a tape drive, had cartridges in the back, hooked it up to your TV. It was about, every pixel was about a foot square, it seems like, looking back. It was was just pretty crazy, but you know, the user interfaces were horrible. It was like gaming on Atari, 2600 kind of platform, right?
Yeah.
Except Atari was much more of a in consumer sort of device, right? You plug it in and you let it go. Whereas a VIC-20 was a real computer.
Okay.
So it was more. You had to learn basic commands, basic programming commands, just to load a program up, right?
Okay. Yeah, we never had the VIC-20 over here, as far as I know. We only had the Commodore and the Amiga.
Right. Well, the VIC was a Commodore Business Machines box that preceded the 64.
Okay.
So you guys might have had it
in different guys or something.
Yeah. So I feel like really, I've always been a hardcore gamer because back in the day, the games that were the funnest to me were, hardcore computer games. I've never really been, until relatively recently, into console games at all. My first console was Xbox. I got for my oldest son. Since then, I've gone on and have a number of other consoles as well, but mostly they're for the kids, right? I don't play on them that often.
You've been corrupted, haven't you?
Well, I don't know about corrupted, but, there's a lot of, that's the way gamings are going, right? Games are going to the consoles. And which is kind of sad to an old fart like myself, because I still really love gaming on the PC. I think it's, for me at least, the perfect platform for gaming. The user interfaces are almost always superior to a console.
Yeah, definitely, I agree. Yeah,
I think video is always above what a console can put out. Right, and all the peripherals and all the technology that just goes into a modern PC is head and shoulders above what you get on a console. And the bad thing about a console is when it comes out, that's what it is, right? It doesn't really incrementally change over time. Whereas a PC, my PC today is 20 times more capable than it was 5 years ago when an Xbox 360 first launched.
And of course, as well, like, consoles are locked systems, so whatever platform holder says goes, doesn't it? And you can't move away to another provider within the Xbox Live landscape.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly right. You're very locked in, which is, of course, the whole point of a console, right?
Yeah.
Microsoft loves it because I'm beholden to Microsoft, right?
Yeah. More money for them.
But I've also never been able to make a transition to with certain exceptions, right? To playing games on a console, just because the controls don't work for my mind, right? You can't teach an old dog new tricks, and this old dog knows mouse and keyboard and does not understand right bumper and left bumper.
Yeah, some of the... I'm not too bad, but I would never be able to play FPS competitively on a console.
Right. I mean, I tried to play Assassin's Creed on the 360 and just could not get my tiny little mind around how that worked. I always feel like I'm one of those, I always feel like I'm a turret guy, right? I'm always pointing a certain direction, then I have to stop and turn and then go forward again.
It's like you're a tank or something rather than actually being like an infantryman.
Exactly. That's exactly right. Exactly right. So that's, you know, that's where, but anyway, to get back to your point or to your question, that's really where I got started. Just back in the dawn of computing, you know, VIC 20 to Commodore 64 to PC, and then really PC on up. All I got right. My first PC back in 88.
Ooh.
That's about it, really.
What was your processor in your first PC? Can you remember? Was it like a 286 or a 386?
It was a 386 SX.
Ooh. Did it have the turbo button as well?
It had a turbo button, yeah. And it had 1 meg of RAM and a 40 meg hard drive. And the guy who sold it to me said, "You will never fill this up."
I bet you never did. I bet you threw it away before you filled it up.
Yeah, I probably did. But wow. Just thinking back, that's like, wow. 40
that
megs.
Scary.
Yeah, we've just recorded 40 megs, right? So
probably. Oh man, I can't imagine going back to that kind of size. Yeah, that's incredible. Oh, I've had like a bit of a weird history with gaming. Like when I was young, I mean, I was only born in the early 1980s, and my first gaming device was a NES, but I didn't get it when it first came out. It was one, you know, I was always a couple years behind the curve, and I had a couple. I sold that. I had about 3 games on it, and one was Goonies 2. And one was the Turtles game, and I can't remember. I think it was Mega Man 2 had the other one. And I sold that to get, of all things, a Game Gear. Do you remember that?
Game Gear, yeah. I vaguely remember when that came out.
And it was just like the colour screen, and I had a couple, like 2 games on it, and I loved it. But the batteries would run out like in 10 minutes. So it wasn't really a portable device because I had to have it plugged into my wall socket.
Right.
I'd just sit on my bed and play it. So it was fun, but then you know, got rid of that and moved on to the SNES and stuff like that. But then, yeah, my mum got a PC for her dissertation. She was doing like a degree at the time. And, you know, I got Duke Nukem 3D and Doom. And, oh, yeah, I had a bit of an addiction then. I played, do you remember Dune 2?
Oh, yes, absolutely.
Yeah, like the forebearer of all like modern RTS.
Yeah, that was an incredible game.
Yeah, I played that with my friends every day for a whole school summer holidays, and then like after that I just kind of stopped playing. I think it was about mid 1996 or 7 or something. No, it must have been 1997. I didn't really play games again until about 2001. I don't know what it was. I mean, I ended up going to university, and then that summer I bought my own PC, and then since then I really got into it, and I just started making my own systems and buying my own games and stuff.
Right.
Yeah, and that was it.
Become a hobbyist.
Yeah, I don't know what turned me to the dark side. I think it was the fact that I bought Quake 3, because I used to love Quake 2 and Quake 1.
Right.
I bought Quake 3 to play on my uber-hot PC I got from this crappy retailer, and it wouldn't play, because I didn't have a dedicated sound card, and my graphics card wasn't good enough to handle it. I think I had a GeForce 2 MX or something like that, with like 12 megabytes of RAM or something. Yeah, it didn't work out so well, but yeah, it's
So then you had to figure out the bane of the PC owner's existence, or at least it's become my bane, is upgrading and getting your knuckles bloody and running cable and all the fun stuff that goes along with having a PC as your hobby.
Yeah,
right. Hardware upgrades and software mismatches and all that nonsense.
Especially back in the DOS days, that was terrible. But it has got progressively better, and a lot of PCs these days are much more like consoles in usability. I mean, like these days, you install something, it's pretty much ready to go. So no, you have to fiddle around with changing things from EMS to XMS and stuff like that.
Yeah, that, you know, you do romanticize the past, but there's no way you can romanticize that sort of thing, right?
Especially if you didn't know what was going on.
I need one more K for this stupid game to run. One more K. Oh, those days were not fun.
I remember when you had to go in and like make your own little auto-exec bat file and whatever config sys, and you'd cut out all the crap that didn't need to be in there and put only what you needed in for your game. Oh, that's brilliant.
Yeah.
Good old days.
Load high. High mem sys. Oh, yeah.
High mem sys. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that stuff is awesome. Yeah, you're right. It is a lot better now. I mean, there's no doubt about it. The, you know, I just went through an upgrade cycle earlier this year, and I replaced motherboard and video card and power supply and the case, because my case was probably 12 or 13 years old. It was time to do an upgrade.
Wow, that is recycling for you.
Yeah, well, I still have it. I'm probably going to recycle it some more and make a home server out of it. But what I've discovered is over time, I'm not really that interested in plugging cards into motherboards and running wire in constricted areas anymore.
Oh, really? Okay.
It's, I don't know. I used to live for that stuff. I used to be, that would be, you know, how can I run this cable just a little bit more efficiently, so have a little bit more slack on the end, and a little bit better airflow throughout the motherboard.
Oh,
and
just chuck it in there. Just chuck it in there. Don't worry about that.
But nowadays, it's like, you know, I just want to pop this stuff in, and I want it to work. I want to get back to Team Fortress 2 or whatever crazy stuff I'm wasting my time with at that time.
Yeah, that's fair enough. That's cool. I mean, my dad's like that. I do all this upgrading for him. But, I mean, I really don't think, like, if you get like a decent computer these days, I don't think you need to buy a new one for pretty much possibly ever. I mean, I've had my current PC for 5 years now, and it's only just started to struggle. I mean, right. I can play Crysis on this motherfucker, you know what I mean?
Right.
You know, pardon my language, sorry.
But, that's right.
But yeah, I mean, 5 years old PC playing Crysis, I mean, what's going on with that? And yet people were complaining that Crysis was one of these games, you know, that you can't run. I mean, okay, I'm not running on ultra-high settings on DX10. I'm running in DX9 mode, but it still looks pretty good.
Right. Well, and I think this might be a further topic is people's crazy expectations for, you know, you pop in a game and you want to turn everything on ultra high level, and it's just, people have crazy expectations that way. But I guess I agree with you to a certain degree, but also, you know, I've always been kind of and I used to be more adamant about this, but I've always been the kind of person who wanted to go to the top or the near top of the hardware hierarchy, whatever that is, right?
Yeah.
Because I always felt like you got more longevity and value for your dollar if you went, maybe not to the top level because you always pay a new
premium, yeah,
right? The new guy's premium, but if you go to the second tier, you always get a or at least you used to, and I don't know how true it is anymore, a good break from, you know, what the top tier is, but also a really good part that's going to last for a long time.
Yeah, that's my philosophy as well, yeah.
But now it seems to me, and maybe this is, you know, me getting old, but it doesn't seem like even the next tier down from the top is, I guess the third tier down from the top is now is acceptable to me because there's just not that much difference between those top tiers anymore. It doesn't seem like.
Mm. I think part of it is just because developments of games is focused mainly on consoles now, there's not a drive to improve those graphics and the demands on PC gaming systems. And frankly, I mean, as you just said then, you know, middle of the road gaming hardware will be enough for this year, next year, possibly another third year.
Right. Well, and I think also, I think you have a good point there, right? Because the PC has stopped being the premier development environment for games because for a lot of reasons. I think that you're right. If you get a brand new PC that's pretty well spec'd out, you're good to go for the next 3 or 4 years because PCs are becoming more consoleized, if that's a word.
Yeah.
In that the console lifetime dictates the PC hardware lifetime. It seems to be, at least on this cycle.
Yeah, right? Definitely, yeah.
I mean, I remember when the Xbox 360 came out and it was, the specs were better than pretty much any PC you could buy at the time. But of course now, the PC is far surpassed it. But I don't think the gains are really that great.
No, they're mostly bad ports, so they take up a lot more processing time and stuff.
Right.
And of course, as well, I mean, the consoles, all of them so far are in order operations, aren't they? Whereas obviously PCs out of order configuration.
Right. So, I mean, and here's another topic we could talk about at some point is ways that the PC can reignite its market share or legacy of being an innovative platform, because there's a lot of things that the PC can do that the consoles really are not well suited to do right now. Right? And but yeah, that's probably a long-lived topic for another day.
That's fair.
You know, so I think the current generation of stuff is going to suffice for the current generation of the consoles, which appears to be another 2 to 3 years, right?
I'm hoping, you know, but fingers crossed, because I really do not want this console generation to end anytime soon.
And I think some of the things that are going to be coming out next year, right, these add-ons,
yeah,
right, may dictate...
What's the Sony... Well, the Sony One thing, and you got
and then the Microsoft and Natal thing, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I think how that comes out and plugs into the current install base is interesting, because that will dictate whether we can continue to extend this console lifecycle for another, you know, for longer. If it comes out and those add-ons suck, then they're gonna push out a new console faster, right?
You think it's gonna go shorter, do you?
Well, if the talk comes out and it's a disaster and it doesn't work with the current Xbox hardware.
Oh no, they wouldn't release it if they did that.
Well, I don't know. Wouldn't they?
I mean, if it didn't work, you couldn't release it, could you?
Well, I don't know. This is Microsoft we're talking about, right?
I mean, 56% failure rate, it does ring a bell. Yeah, I see you, you know. But, are we joking?
But I guess what I'm saying is if, you know, it may work great in a Microsoft lab somewhere, but the real test is pushing it out to consumers and allowing them to augment their current hardware with that. If that is problematic, then I bet you will see an Xbox 362 or an Xbox whatever out a lot earlier than you would otherwise, right? Because they're going to have to come out with something hardware-wise.
Well, I mean, the other possible avenue they have is they could release a specific SKU with Intel embedded in it. So it could be maybe a slightly bigger box or slightly different internal configuration, which is like Natal ready, as it were, but keep the other internal parts the same.
Right, but of course the problem there is fragmenting your user base, right? And as we've seen with the Wii Motion Plus, of course that's Nintendo, so it's crazy by definition. But but the Wii Motion Plus is not.
Taking off.
There's not a lot of stuff being developed for the Wii Motion Plus that I'm aware of, right? Not a lot's come out, certainly.
I mean, I think then wasn't it really weird how they announced it? Like, it was kind of a surprise to a lot of people, including publishers and developers.
Yeah, see, they kind of yanked it out, right? But that's kind of Nintendo. They're their own sort of world, right?
Yeah.
They kind of do things their own way. but again, it's one of those things that came out to a bit of fanfare, and then nothing. Right.
I think one of the problems is you're spending, I don't know how many dollars it is, but you're probably spending about, I don't know, £40-50 on one controller.
Right. And so there's not a whole wide adoption rate. So publishers would be insane to develop software for that.
Yeah.
Right. Because there hasn't been that great of an uptake of it. And I think, you know, not to draw too much of an analogy between that and say Natal or Sony Wand, but you can see the same sort of kind of dynamic playing out there, right?
Yeah. It's like the iToy problem, isn't it?
Right. That's a good example. That's a good analogy there.
It's like, what was it? There was like two games released for iToy. It was iToy Pet, and there was that card game thing. I can't remember what it's called now. Do you remember you put the cards in on the board, and then it returns a 3D depictions on the screen?
Which seemed kind of cool, but
it's, yeah, I thought it was cool though. But I mean, I haven't got a PS3.
Yeah, I don't either.
Yeah,
but yeah, so I don't know. I mean, I think so. I guess the point I'm trying to make is, if it's hard to extend this new technology on the current platforms, then you're going to see a console sooner rather than later. Okay. But if they could take these new hardware concepts and successfully apply them to this current platform, then really, is there any reason ever to have an Xbox next? or a PlayStation 4, really, for the next 7 years?
In fact, I would prefer that, not only because, obviously, as a console owner myself, it benefits me, because games are going to get cheaper maybe not get cheaper, but there'll be better games, because everyone's familiar with the hardware and software requirements. It's going to be a bigger install base, so there's going to be more risk taken on certain types of games, or, you know, they're going to put more money into making those games. If they shift, I mean, publishers and developers, I mean, they're so supposedly strapped for cash because of the current economic climate and because of the install bases on the Wii and PS3 and 360, even though they're pretty enormous at the moment, but not compared to PS2. I can't foresee them wanting to move to the next generation within the next 5 years. It just doesn't seem feasible. We don't have the install base of gaming, so people to actually want to go out and buy the next gaming console. We haven't pushed past the current boundaries of people we already had in the PS2 and GameCube era.
Right. And that's a good observation, because, I mean, I was an extremely late comer to the PS2, but there's a lot of crazy stuff out there for the PS2, and it looks like, I mean, if I really wanted to go back, there is just a plethora of games for the PS2 that just look crazy, like crazy good, right? I mean, you really want to get into it, right?
Yeah, I mean, I agree completely. I mean, and things are, even the graphics as well. Some of the graphics on the PS2 games, considering how underpowered it is, you know, they approach a decent Xbox One game.
Oh, yeah, definitely. One of the games I played on the PlayStation 2 was Final Fantasy XII, and that's a good-looking game. Even now, it's a good-looking game.
I still haven't played that.
At one point, I felt like I needed to go back and do a little history on the PS2, and that was one I picked up. And it was, like I say, it's. I don't know if it was very fun. I'm not into JRPGs, but But it was good looking, and I did play it a lot longer than I would have imagined I would have played it. So
that sucked you in.
Yeah, it did kind of suck me in. You know, the story was pretty good, and it was fun to run around, and the graphic, like I say, the graphics were really good. And it's on an old piece of hardware.
Yeah. Did you ever play God of War or?
That's another one that I picked up. God of War.
It's pretty good looking, really, considering how old it is.
Yeah. Yeah, that is another good-looking game. I didn't play that one for very long because of other reasons. Mainly, I suck at those sorts of games. But But it was fun. It was fun until I got frustrated, and I can totally see why people think that's, you know, talk about that as one of the great games of all time. There's no doubt about it. And I think Guitar Hero 1 and 2. I think we've exhausted my PS2 collection pretty much.
Fair enough. That's all right. Yeah, I haven't had unfortunately, I gave my PS2 away to my sister. And then I gave my replacement, my slim one, to my mum. So I've done my bit for expanding the gaming audience.
You're a carrier, right?
Yeah. I'm a virus spreader. That's what I am.
So that's, you know, I will pull out the PS2 and put something in every so often, just because it's, you know, it is such a great thing. And if I had a lot more spare time, I would probably go back and play some other games. There's lists of great PS2 games, and it's rather lengthy lists of games that I feel like I kind of missed out on by not being console aware back in the day.
Yeah, even on like the GameCube, the N64, is like, there's so many games, and the problem is, because more games keep coming out, you never have time to go back, and I've got a pile, it's probably about as high as my hip, on both on PC and on PS2, and getting around to them is going to be difficult.
Right, and I keep telling myself I'm going to go back and do some of that, but I never will. You know, we got a GameCube for my youngest. He wanted Super Smash Brothers Brawl.
That's good.
And so we picked out a few other things, but for some reason, I don't know, I've never been a Nintendo fan. I don't know why. I think because I missed out on the Super Nintendo and the Nintendo, you know, the NES.
Yeah.
Back in the day, it just doesn't have there's just not a whole lot of meaning in there for me, and most of the stuff seems kind of shallow and kind of goofy, to be honest.
You're more of a hardcore, I want my games to be brown and black. Rah! I'm met with blood.
Maybe there's a little bit of that. Maybe there's a little bit of that. I don't know. I've just never been able to get into any of the...
That's fair enough, yeah.
Those games. My kids love them, though, so that's good, I guess. Another generation.
You're trying to indoctrinate them into the church of gaming.
Absolutely. Any gaming's better than no gaming, right?
For kids. Yeah, definitely. And you can always break them into the Xbox later on, you know.
That's right.
That's a good plan, though, this. Another thing to talk about, just what kind of gamer are you? Are you like, because you know, when you, I don't know about you, but when I watch films or when I'm reading books, I tend to be quite active and reactive. So I tend to cringe, or I tend to, you know, want to shout at the TV, or I tend to, you know, shake my fists and get angry and stuff like that. When I'm playing games, I've become this like placid lake. And I only get angry when I get frustrated, like because the game's either being crap or it's cheating me or whatever, right. Or I can't do it. I'm just not good enough. But apart from that, I don't react. I mean, I don't know whether it's because the storylines aren't really quite there yet in comparison with other media, or whether it's I don't make the connection with the characters the same. I don't know what it is, but I'm very, very placid when I'm playing games. Just sit there and absorb it.
That's interesting. I think I'm the same way, and unless I'm playing a multiplayer game, and I get a lot more animated then, and you know what, this thought just kind of occurs to me that I think it's all about, and this might be wrong, but I think it's all about the person tense that you're playing in, right?
Mm, yeah.
If you're reading a book, or you're watching a movie, even if the book is written in first person, you're really, really reading it in third person, right? This is happening to somebody else. But when you're playing a game, it's all first person. And so you're, well, not all, but for all intents and purposes, it's first person.
Yeah, I understand what you're saying, yeah.
And so I think we tend to let the on-screen avatars, if you will, do all of the reaction for us, right? So if you're in a game and somebody makes a really good headshot and they pump their fist or whatever,
yeah,
that's your reaction. You don't need to react because your on-screen alternate persona is making that reaction for you.
That's fair enough, yeah.
I, again, this is without really thinking about it through very, very much, but I'm thinking about my own reactions to games and how I play them and what gets me excited and what makes me angry and how I get emotional. I think it's that transference of your id, for lack of a better word, pseudo-babble psychology there, onto your on-stream persona that kind of takes you out, kind of makes you emotionally detached as the player. I think the other thing is the fact that it's hard to become emotionally attached when you are having to do these mechanical sorts of gameplay mechanics, right?
Mm. Yeah, yeah.
I mean, it's not like you as a person who's been walking since you were 18 months old or eight months old or whatever, and you do it without thinking and breathing without thinking and moving and manipulating your environment without thinking. Obviously, you have an emotional response. It's difficult to have an emotional response when you have to remember to, you know, right-click here and move these guys there, and what's the next tactic I have to use, or I need to switch my gun here because these guys are resistant to armor piercing bullets, yada yada yada.
Yeah.
It's hard to get emotionally caught up in those sorts of circumstances, I think. Right? Whereas a lot easier in a movie where you can kind of empathize with the characters on the screen more. And of course movies are a lot better at, they've had a lot more time to develop the mess with your emotions side of
build
things.
Build the crescendo
have,
music
right?
and stuff like that. Yeah, I agree.
I mean, I don't think we've ever had our game making 101 where people talk about, right? Nobody's sat down and written the principles of a three act play for a video game, right?
Yeah.
That just hasn't been developed yet. And whereas, you know, other visual media, they can all, you know, they have thousands of years of Western, or shouldn't say Western, any culture to drive from to be, show how to manipulate emotion and
expectations and stuff.
Exactly, that video games certainly do not have.
Yeah, that's a good point. I'm just wondering though, like thinking about that and thinking about my experience, I'm just wondering how you respond to the kind of stereotypical faceless protagonist, like Gordon Freeman, or I'm trying to think of another, like maybe, you know, Master Chief has a personality, doesn't he?
Yeah.
Because I hate faceless protagonists, ones which don't say anything, ones which don't do anything. Because it's like you're trapped in a cage.
Yeah.
You know, and that kind of... People just in the game are always assuming things about you or what you think or what you say, what you don't say. And, you know, it kind of annoys me on a small level, and then it, you know, doesn't make me stop playing, but...
Well, and you get some ridiculous sorts of situations, right, where, you know, you're talking to Dr. Vance... And he's having a serious conversation about the Combine, and you're hopping on the chair and knocking crap all over the place, right? And he never reacts to you. I mean, but it's difficult, right? Because if Gordon Freeman had a personality, you know, this is a good question, I think. Would he be as good of a protagonist, at least in the environment in which Val puts him in, right? Because... Yeah. If he was a fist pumping, you know, macho dude, I don't think Half-Life works.
It wouldn't. I mean, they wouldn't pick that personality, but, though, would they? If they did,
you'd hope not. But even but then if you go the other way, where I mean, the dude's ostensibly a, you know, advanced degree in physics from MIT
/ football scholarship.
Yeah, well, I went to MIT, so they don't have football scholarships. So,
oh no! Just wondering where he got his physique from. That's all.
but yeah, I mean, so that's where things get odd for me, right? Is if this guy is, you know, the super scientist, how is he able to kick so much ass? Because I've known a lot of scientists. I'm sure you have as well.
Yeah.
Not too many of them are kicking a whole lot of ass. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do. I know one guy, but he also had a pot belly and was pretty lazy as well. So,
you know, I mean, you give that guy a crowbar. He's not making it to the first elevator in Half-Life. So
he'd probably get there and go, "This button doesn't work," and then proceed to rewire the whole system and take that. That would just die and just from lack of food or something.
Exactly. So, I think, you know, Master Chief's another one where, you know, of course he's got a reason for his persona, but again, I think it's a clumsy attempt to allow the player to project himself.
I don't know, because I think Master Chief does have a persona. I mean, you see it in the cutscenes, you see it in the way he interacts with Cortana, because he talks, doesn't he? And there's that way, you know that you're playing a guy with a sense of duty.
Right. Well, and you're right. And I guess the other side of it is that it's not very incongruous when he kicks ass because he's supposed to.
Yeah.
Right? There's no doubt about what he is and what he's there to do.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, some other protagonists, there's a large incongruity between what he is and what he's there to do and what he ends up doing, right?
Yeah. I mean, that's really my only major gripe with the character of Gordon Freeman, apart from not being completely unreactionary. To anyone who talks to him, he just doesn't react to any events either. So it's like, okay, Gordon, go and sort this out. Gordon, go and do that. And you know, thanks. You know, I like being told what to do when I'm, you know, in the army.
Right.
But I'm just this guy that everyone's expecting me to do stuff. So why am I doing it?
Well, I think this leads to a larger issue, right? Whereas, pick almost any game,
yeah,
where you're the hero, which is almost any game.
Yeah. Every game, yeah.
If I'm here to save the freaking world, why do I need to go kill 5 rats? Right? I'm here to save the world. I'm not here to mess around. I'm not here to take your stinking package over across town. I'm here to save the freaking world. Let's get it on. Those games do kind of bother me, right? Those tropes are a little bit
worn.
Well, it's not just worn. It's even if you take it back to its initial, you know, most basic roots. you know, I'm the uber hero, dude. Why am I doing all this stupid stuff?
Yeah.
You know, and you understand the gameplay reasons behind it, but it still makes for a dopey story, right? You know.
Yeah.
Why am I the chosen one? I'm level one. Really? You couldn't find a better chosen one than this, you know, fresh off the farm? Yeah. Right? I mean, yeah. That always struck me as very odd. Like, for instance, you know, I don't know if you have you played Dragon Age yet?
I haven't, unfortunately. No, I'm going to play it maybe next year.
So I don't want to spoil anything, but again, you have the same issue, right? Where you are, well, I'm going to spoil a little bit, and I hope you've heard this before, but you are recruited into a
Grey Wardens,
right? These are the guys who keep the bad guys at bay.
Yeah.
Right? And you're recruited because you know, a high-ranking Grey Warden sees something in you that he thinks you'd bring credit to the Grey Wardens, right? He wants you. And yet, your level, you can barely tie your own shoelaces, right? It kind of rubs the story / gameplay. You know, there's like two different things being served and none of them being served equally, right?
Yeah.
There's the story, whereas, yes, you're the chosen, picked guy, but then there's the gameplay which says, well, you may be the picked guy, but you can't cast more than a first-level spell. Well, you know what? If I'm picking, you know, badasses to be in my pick group, I'm not picking a guy who can only cast a first-level spell. Sorry. Yeah.
And a lot of those Origins characters, they're actually well into their lives, aren't they?
Well, yeah, seemingly, right? I mean, you know, the mage character has just gone through becoming a full-fledged mage, which I imagine
would give you certain powers that you probably don't have.
Well, and not just that, but I imagine you have completed a course of study that gets you to that point.
Yeah.
And then the dwarf noble, that's another one that I've played, you are, you know, the son of the king, right? Sorry, I hope that didn't spoil anything, but
no.
And so your first thing is you've been named the commander of the dwarven armies to fight the bad guys, you know, under the earth. So you got to be some level of badass, right?
Definitely, yeah.
But I've only got the first tier of, you know, two-handed sword skills. That just doesn't make any sense. I don't know about the dwarves, but boy, if that's the best you got, then you guys are in a lot of trouble.
Yeah, it could just be like a figurehead, though. I suppose maybe he's, you know, not actually a proper warrior, perhaps.
Well, perhaps. I mean, you know, I guess that's a good part about RPGs, right? Is you can kind of bring your own
mythos, whatever, or story or something.
Right. It's all in your head, so you can, you know, if you really enjoy the story, you can justify just about anything. And if you don't like the story very much, then it's easy to pick apart, just like anything else.
Definitely, yeah. I mean, I suppose on the opposite end of this, I mean, there are games like that, which have a bit of a twist, you know, like the Metroid games and other games where you start off with all your powers, then they get taken away from you.
Right. And I actually like those games, as long as they make sense.
Yeah.
Right? As long as the reason for losing your powers is a reasonable thing, then that's all good, right?
Yeah, yeah. It's good for me as well, yeah. It's the only problem I've got with Metroid is the difficulty spikes.
Yeah. Yes.
That's another topic for another day.
Right. How do you make it so that it doesn't get too hard too quickly, or things don't change so much that the player gets totally lost and frustrated?
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I do like, here's all your powers, you know, here's all the really kick-ass things you're going to be able to do. I mean, this is your internal monologue talking, right? But here's all the kick-ass things you're going to be able to do later on in the game, and then, you know, we're going to take them away from you. You have to earn them back. And that gives you that sense of progression that people like. But but you can always see, wow, I'm going to be a badass at some point.
And the great thing about that, I find, is you don't appreciate them when you have them, but as you get them back, you appreciate what you didn't have or what you were missing. But sometimes in RPGs, You don't always remember what it was like to be back in level one again, or, you know, or in different games, you know, you think, okay, I'm doing well now, but it's like you know, when you're 30, and you look back how you were when you were 15, you think, how did I manage to survive? You know what I mean? Life must have been so much more difficult for me because I didn't know anything.
Right. No, yeah, I totally see what you mean. I think the other thing is when you're in an RPG and you start from level one, not able to do anything, and as you progress, is you don't ever really know what powers are useful.
Right? Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and there are so many examples of games where you have to go in and play 6-7 hours in order to understand what powers are actually useful in the game, and then start over. And that aggravates the hell out of me, right? I shouldn't have to do that.
It's the same in like tactical squad-based squad-based games like UFO and stuff like that.
Right.
Where if you make the wrong decisions early on, until you understand how the game works and what's going to be a good strategy, sometimes you just have to just get rid of all that and start fresh.
Right. No, that's a good point. I mean, and I wish... It's hard to tell the difference between are you trying to be a power gamer and totally min-max the system, or do you really have to go through that educational process in the game in order to understand the nuances in order to be more effective and get more enjoyment out of the game?
Yeah, I think some games definitely you do, because I'm definitely not a min-maxer. I like doing side quests, so I tend to do all the side quests I come across, but I don't have to see everything in the game. I'm not like one of these people where I have to complete everything to feel like I've got either my money's worth or I've actually played the game properly.
Right. I'm not the same. I used to be that way, but I don't have time for it. And And I also don't have the patience for it anymore either, because really at the end of the day, there is no game that I've run across yet that's so compelling that I have to go 100% on it.
Yeah.
I do like to see I do like to see most of the content, though, just because I like to see, in RPGs, characterizations, or in RTSs, I like to see the different units and how they're put together, and they kind of make the game bigger than it was.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, at some point you have to just say, well, there's something else to do.
And so there's always another game on the horizon as well.
That's exactly right.
Maybe you can move on to that that banning thing I was talking about.
Yeah.
Talked to you about before. I thought it was very strange. I mean, Modern Warfare 2 is like an exploit where you can run around with your some kind of Stinger missile or something. I don't know what, some kind of missile launcher you've got on your shoulder. As long as you're sprinting, when you get killed, that explodes after you die, killing anyone within like I think it's like a 30-foot radius or something, or 30-meter radius. It's quite a large area.
Right.
And it is like a glitch, but it's not really cheating, you know what I mean? Not in the classical sense of the word, in my opinion.
Right.
But it's resulted in people being banned and not banned just from the game, but banned from the whole of Xbox Live for like 24 hours or for like 48 or up to a week. I think the maximum is 2 weeks, although there were some rumblings about permabans as well. It's a complete permanent. I don't know if it's console or whether it's your gamertag that would be banned.
Wow.
I'm guessing gamertag, because console ban would be super harsh for something which is pretty minor, really, in the grand scheme of things.
Yeah, and this sort of thing, I can tell it bugs you as well. It's here's my thoughts on this sort of thing. If it's in the game, and it's not a house rule, right? Which you really can't have house rules in Modern Warfare 2.
Yeah, I mean, you can't kick it. They remove the options to kick people from servers.
Right.
You can't vote kick people anymore.
So that's horrible, right? So that's bad by itself. But if it's in the game, then it should be allowed, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's... And so if you don't like it and you're the developer, fix your stupid game.
Yeah, I mean, they've said there's a patch coming through, but why are they banning them? Why, it's going to be a temporary problem.
Right, and so, well, yeah, and I understand that it's kind of, Well, I don't know. I was about to say, I can understand that it's kind of viewed as an exploit of some sort, but you know what? Mm. I don't agree with that. I don't think it is an exploit. It doesn't sound like it. When you start having to read players' intent, did I intend to do this or did I do this on accident? Then you're on a very slippery slope, I think, right? Yeah. Then you're like, do I get banned because I happened to meet these preconditions and then just got killed and then it happened and now I can't play for 2 weeks?
I don't think it's quite as cut and dry as that. I mean, I think to be able to do this, you have to pull out your grenade, cock it, and then switch to this missile weapon.
Yeah.
Which, and then you have to then keep sprinting. You can't stop or anything, otherwise it will reset and stuff.
Okay,
so it's a bit of a glitch in the sense that, you know how bunny hopping in Quake was a glitch,
right?
But apparently it does really ruin play for everyone. But if they had included the ability to kick people from servers, then it wouldn't have been a problem,
right?
Because you just kick these people and they wouldn't ever be able to come back.
Well, and I think the other thing is that, you know, I think you just put up with it until it gets patched out, right?
Because, yeah, definitely.
And which, I can't believe I'm saying that because, I mean, I can't believe we're going to patch everything, but I guess we're at that point where a game is not really ever done. You put it out and you see how people work within the confines of the game and then you fix it.
Yeah.
And a game like Modern Warfare 2 seems to be exactly like that. I don't know. It is pretty, it seems pretty obnoxious move by Infinity Ward
slash Microsoft to do this.
Yeah,
it's kind of weird because, I mean, there's been similar things. Like, I remember in Gears 2, like, the multiplayer in that was ridiculously broken, wasn't it? I don't know if you ever played that. I didn't play it, but I remember people on the Gamers with Jobs forums complaining about it a lot. And yet, no one got banned for using any, you know, bad or distasteful tactics in that game.
Right.
And apparently there's a very similar sort of exploit in Halo 3. And before they fixed that, you know, no one was banned for doing that.
Right.
So it's kind of the inconsistency of applying this kind of a punishment, I suppose. I mean,
right.
What's punishable, as you said before, you know, where's the line of what's punishable and what's not?
Right. So I definitely can't get behind this in any stretch, right? I mean, this is... It's just bad on them, and I think they feel like they can get away with it due just to the popularity of the game, I believe.
Oh,
right?
Yeah.
If this was a Rogue Trooper, right?
Yeah. Wait, so is Rogue Trooper the one with the blue guy, or is this the new game that's out soon or something, Rogue Warrior or something, or Rogue Trooper?
I think it's Rogue Trooper is the one with ex-Navy SEAL, U.S. Navy SEAL.
Oh, okay, yeah, that's a new one then, yeah.
And the only reason I know anything about it is I saw a quick look on Giant Bomb today. It looks horrible. They were trying to demo the multiplayer, and there was nobody online for that game.
Wow.
And so that's why I've used it as an example of a game that's not as popular. If they had an exploit like this, people would suck it up and live with it because they want more people to play. They don't want to ban people who are actually playing their game, I can't imagine.
Yeah, definitely, yeah, no.
But if you got, I don't know, what did Modern Warfare do? 2 million the first day or number like that?
Ridiculous, yeah, ridiculous.
And so, yeah, if I ban a couple of, you know, ban a 20,000 people, who cares?
Yeah, that's true. And it's just that kind of, unfortunately, that's been the mentality of the whole Modern Warfare 2 release, from my perspective, especially on the PC side, but also on the console side to a certain degree as well. And the main problem I have with Microsoft's involvement with this is they're hiding behind the kind of catch-all, it's in the terms of service, we can do whatever we want. Well, actually, you know, okay, terms of service, fair enough, but if that were true, then any company in every country would be doing masses of bad things to their consumers. But you can't hide behind this thing saying, you know, it's our service, you know, we'll do whatever we want, because eventually laws get put into place.
Well, I think to point to the Modern Warfare 2 launch in particular, it does smack of being very heavy-handed, right? I mean, does seem like that the companies involved have taken their audience for granted to a large degree, and I guess they have every right to, right? Because everybody knew this was going to sell a ton of units, so
They couldn't really lose, really, could they? I mean, any bad press was more press for them if it was free.
Exactly. And so why should we cater to gamers when we know we're going to make, you know, $300-400 million off of this game? Now, Modern Warfare 3, does it do as well because of their high-handed sort of tactics?
Oh, it won't be affected, I don't think. Well, I mean, the majority of gamers don't even go online, do they?
Well, that's true. And
not majority, but about half.
But I do think that stuff like that does end up catching up with you eventually, right?
Eventually, definitely.
If you come out with Modern Warfare 3 and you have the same sort of almost casual disregard for your audience, you know, and I'm not one of those guys who is all up in arms about, you know, PC, you know, server, dedicated servers.
Dedicated servers.
I don't really give a crap about that, but. But yeah, if you do have, it does seem like they've had a kind of a casual disregard for their consumer base, and so eventually one of these days, people are gonna stop buying your game, and that's just kind of seems to be a law of the universe. Is if you treat people like shit, eventually they'll figure it out.
Yeah, it just takes. I think it takes a long time. I mean, EA were pretty terrible for years. I mean, we're talking like 15 years or so or something, or maybe 10 years.
Yeah.
And it didn't catch up with them for a long time. I think Activision's in that same kind of mentality. They've got that mindset where we'll do whatever it takes now to get all the money coming in, and if it catches up with us, we'll deal with it then.
Right. Yeah, the whole EA thing made me very sad because EA used to be a very joyous thing for me back in the long, long, far distant future.
Like early 90s.
Right, when they first came out, Electronic Artists. Right? They were...
I mean, we had, like, Comanche, was it not Comanche, Desert Strike and stuff like that.
Yeah, well, even before then, it was like, you know, they did Archon, and they did Seven Seas of Gold, and they did all these really awesome games. And they were just a publisher, a loosely banded together group of artists, right? That's the A part. And at some point, they got really big and became, you know... kind of a conglomerate. Yeah, kind of an evil sort of thing, right? Not evil, I guess shouldn't say that, because corporations aren't really evil.
No, they're just kind of impersonal at worst, aren't they?
Right, so you get impersonal and they don't treat people the way they need to be treated, and so, yeah. So I am glad to see that EA has seemingly fixed itself to some degree.
Yeah, although the recent rumblings, I'm not sure how long that'll last.
Well, yeah. Yeah.
Well, we'll see how it goes, but I mean, yeah. I don't mind. I've still got Ubisoft. Cling to Ubisoft's, like, you know, dress or something. Please don't leave me.
Well, they'll get desperate enough to actually really pay attention to customers and do what customers want. And, you know, I think the bad thing is gamers seem to be stupid enough to cut their throats to spite their head, right? You know?
In what sense?
Well, so people want... People say they want innovation. People say they want new experiences. People say they want new and different games. But then games come out and nobody, you know, people don't buy them. And I'm trying to think of a good example, and there are a ton of them, I'm sure. But
yeah, I mean, well, I think that's the problem with that kind of argument. I kind of agree to it to a certain extent. But one of the problems I have with it is, like, the people we see on the internet are a minority of a minority of gamers.
Well, you're correct.
Do you know what I mean? It's like, I look at the, I don't know, the Left 4 Dead boycott, for example. I mean, I didn't sign up for that, but I would have been in the camp if, you know, I would have signed up for it. I think it was like, was it 700,000 people or something like that? But, you know, Left 4 Dead sold, it was about 4-6 million or something in total.
Right.
And that was mostly on PC, Xbox.
Right.
So, like, you know, what percentage of the player base was that? And yet, you know, a lot of them caved anyway and bought Left 4 Dead 2.
Of course they did. If you care enough about a game to sign a internet petition, then you're probably going to buy that game no matter what you say.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? I mean, seriously, that's internet, you know, that's been done to death, but internet petitions are the most ridiculous thing ever, right?
Yeah, unfortunately. I mean, I still haven't bought it. That's another topic for another day, but I just think, like, you know, we don't, if we look at any kind of petition, even in I hate using this phrase, but in real life,
right?
Any kind of petition in real life, a lot of the people who sign a petition will still go against what they signed anyway. You know what I mean? Because it's like herd think, it's group think,
right?
You do what your peers do, So there's always going to be that factor anyway. But you're saying about people asking for innovation and stuff, and, you know, I mean, people ask for hardcore games on the Wii, and I would love hardcore games on the Wii, but I don't have a Wii. I have bought a couple of games for the Wii in anticipation of having enough games to actually be able to buy a Wii at some point in the future.
Right.
Because, you know, there just aren't enough games for me to want to buy it at the moment. But at the same time, the people asking for those hardcore games on the Wii, they're such a minority of the player base. They're not going to be able to help fund an actual game.
Right. But on the other hand, I'm gonna paint a very broad stroke here, but the people on the internet that we're talking about tend to be people, influencers, right? So they're the people who will go out and tout a game.
Like evangelize kind of thing.
Right, they will evangelize. They will be the people who will lead, they will lead people's thoughts toward innovative games, right? So I think that they serve a very necessary purpose, and I think that you have to pay attention to them in the sense that they will, you know, they will lead other people who do have this kind of herd mentality toward games, and specifically toward good games, right? That's not to say that people will not still continue to buy bad games, but I think
unfortunately not.
But I think that the people who, you know, on these internet forums, for all their Sturm and Drang, do have, you know, they are the influencers. You know, I'm trying to think. There's a book that talks about this sort of thing, and there's like three, you know, these are the mavens, right? These are the people who are in the know that people talk, you know, if people know you're a gamer,
yeah,
and they ask you for a suggestion about a game,
yeah,
you'll probably not steer them to a shitty game, right?
Yeah, you probably also wouldn't steer them towards an innovative game as well either, would you? Because
it would depend, right?
Innovative games tend to be a bit out there. They tend to be, in a sense, on the edge of what is mainstream. They tend to be harder to grasp, harder to play, because they tend to be rougher. And so someone who's coming into that situation,
right,
you're not going to try and scare them off gaming by giving them a piece of software that they won't like or want to use.
Right.
It's like saying, I mean, Linux is great, but if someone came to me asking what PC should they buy, I'm telling them that they're going to go on Windows 7.
Well, but
do you know what I mean?
But I guess, you know, one could argue that Windows 7 is more innovative in the ways in which most users care than Linux.
Possibly. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I don't really care either way. in that particular example, but yeah. I see your points. Yeah.
But I think if games are innovative in the right way, people will definitely recommend, right? I mean, Super Mario Galaxy is a pretty innovative game.
Do you think that's innovative?
I think so. I mean, if you look at what it's doing, it's taking an old trope, the 2D platformer, converting it into a three dimensional game, and then it has, you know, very easy drop in co-op. That seems to be pretty innovative for the target audience, right? Which is admittedly parents with kids, right? But still, I mean, and it is a high-quality game, right?
Yeah, it is a high-quality game, you're right, yeah.
And the fact that you can jump in and jump out with that second controller, you come in and you do actual useful things when you're in and then drop out, and it doesn't really impact the main game flow.
Yeah.
We need more games like that, honestly.
Well, I mean, I don't see that as being that innovative. I mean, what we had Sonic, do you ever play, well, you didn't have a console at that time, but Sonic the Hedgehog 2.
Uh-huh.
You could take control of Tails anytime you wanted.
Right.
So there have been games in the past which had that feature.
Right.
So, I mean, and the 3D aspect, I mean, Mario 64 had that, and then you expanded on that with Sunshine.
But did they have it together?
Mario didn't. I'm sure there are other games that have. I don't know them off the top of my head.
So I don't know. Maybe it's innovative if you're not familiar with it then, right? I mean,
90% of ideas aren't, and they're just like either accidental or, you know, conscious rehashes of things that have gone before. I'm not complaining about that, but I think when something's innovative, it tends to be a bit out there, a bit rougher. Things like, I guess, things like Darwinia. Can you imagine giving that kind of game to... I mean, it's an RTS game. Okay, that's not that innovative. But the kind of interface and the way you interact with the game, it's very out there in a graphic style. Would you give that to some random gamer who was playing, or would you give them Command & Conquer 3?
Yeah, probably Command & Conquer 3. Yeah, you're probably right. I feel refuted.
No, I'm not trying to. I'm just offering like a different points of view.
It's no, like, but I don't know. I mean, I guess it depends on if I knew somebody who was into to RTS.
Yeah, definitely.
And I would say,
that.
Yeah, Darwinia, right?
Yeah.
If it was somebody who says, hey, I want to play, you know, I guess first of all, if somebody said, hey, I just want to play a game, I wouldn't turn them on to an RTS in the first place, right?
No.
But so but it says somebody wanted to get into RTSs, I would probably. Either go there. I might not even go there. I might go to something like Rise of Nations, right? Something.
Oh yeah.
Something probably upper crust. See, in that is Rise of Nations had a lot of, you know, they polished the serial numbers off a lot of concepts, but the way they put it together, I felt like was innovative.
Yeah.
Right. And so that's a game that I would, if somebody said they were interested in getting into our real-time strategy games, I would say, here you go. Here's an awesome real-time strategy game. There's a lot of really cool things going on there. And there you go.
But I suppose that comes back to the point of what we're talking about. I'm talking about the games which were kind of really niche on in the either genre or platform. And do you think, would you class Rise of Nations as a niche player in that market? Or would you say it's pretty mainstream in the way it's constructed, even though it's constructed in a pretty novel way?
I don't know. It's a good question.
Because you think about, if you take, I hate when you blank on what you're going to try and give as an example, but, you know, like the Splatterhouse game on the Wii, or whatever it is, the one with the black and white Mad World,
right? Yeah.
Yeah. So that didn't sell very well. But, I mean, you're trying to sell that to an audience who is, you know, mums and children, mostly mums and children,
right.
Really. I mean, I'm not trying to stereotype the Wii owner, but a lot of Wii players are going to be either, you know, non-gamers or casual gamers. And even if you're a hardcore gamer trying to evangelize that game to a less hardcore gamer, perhaps someone who's got more Mario-esque take palette, you know what I mean, they're not going to take to that very well, are they? You kind of want to ease them into it a bit more slowly.
Right, but I guess on the other hand, so I guess there's two points I would draw from that. One is the Wii install base is so large that there are, just by sheer numbers, there are people out there who want a more harder-edged game experience. Right, and I guess the other thing is, and I don't know how valid this is, but if you are an Xbox 360 player mainly, and I'm painting Xbox 360 players in a certain way, but if you're an Xbox 360 player and you want to play a game on the Wii, then I would suggest you probably would want a harder edged experience rather than, you know, butterflies, unicorns, and rainbows.
Yeah, I agree.
Right. So I think Mad World failed. If we consider it to be a failure, I'm not really sure how well it sold. I heard it didn't do that well because I think they didn't market it correctly, right? I think the game ended up not being that great. I don't think it was a good game at the end of the day.
Oh, okay.
Did you like it?
I never played it, but I remember people saying it was decent. It was good.
I mean, I think the main criticism I heard leveled at it was fun for the first 30 minutes.
It was just repetitive after that.
And then it got very repetitive, yeah. And so I think that what ended up happening is the people who went out and bought it then told people who were thinking about buying it that, hey, you know, you may want to save $60. Yeah, it's a rental.
Yeah. That's another thing that bothers me. Sorry, carry on. I'll come back to that in a second.
Well, that's okay. I was pretty much done there, so.
Yeah, that's another thing that bothers me a lot about the Wii is that, you know, we're taking something which doesn't cost us, games which don't cost as much to make because they don't have that graphical complexity behind them, and yet the same price as the PS3 and the 360 games. It just feels like the same with the DS and the Game Boy Advance. I mean, they're not quite as expensive as the the home console, you know, the static consoles, but they're pretty expensive for what you normally get. I just feel like, you know, publishers are really either making a lot of money on them, or they're really, you know, trying to fleece us as consumers.
Well, they're either making a lot of money on the Wii games, or they're losing a lot of money on the other two console games, right?
Yeah, yeah.
One or the other.
Probably both.
And probably both. I mean, I don't know enough about development on any of these platforms, except for maybe the 360 a little bit, to speak to how expensive they may be. But I think from what I understand, the Wii is a specialty device in the sense that the people who know how to program that are fewer than the people who know how to program the Xbox 360 and the PS3.
Oh, so you think that they might come at like a premium?
I think there's probably a little bit of that going on, and I think that's why you tend to see, aside from Nintendo being a different beast from everybody else, I think that's why you see a lot more first-party games, because a lot of that knowledge is in-house in Nintendo. This is me talking out of my orifice, but it seems like that would be at least part of the calculus there, right? Yeah. Is that there's not that many third-party guys who have a level of expertise on the Wii versus...
I think the only big lack of possible knowledge base is in the actual application of motion controls.
Right.
Because I know the GameCube and Wii are very similar in hardware. The Wii is like a bit of a souped-up and improved version of the GameCube.
Right.
And not to be derogatory, because I quite like both of them. I think they're both quite very good systems.
Right.
But there's nothing. It's not like the difference between the PS1, the PS2, and the PS3 in architecture, where the three different, completely different systems.
Right. I don't know. Like I said, I don't know enough about it to speak, other than in sort of general terms.
In general terms, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
But if you look at the GameCube, right? I mean, how many? It seemed to me, based on my near term purchasing experiences with the GameCube, that there weren't a lot of third party products for the GameCube.
Yeah, no, they abandoned it pretty soon after, you know, after launch.
So I don't. So I don't know that. I don't know that any development houses that are doing GameCube/Wii development may be asking for a premium there, right?
Possibly, yeah.
Because that knowledge is specialized, or Sony brings it in house, or Sony provides quote unquote special services for people who are doing that development. So I guess to get back to your point is perhaps it costs more to develop for the Wii in development and not in art asset generation, right?
Or whatever. Yeah. That's a fair comment, I think.
Cool.
Line drawn. I mean, under the conversation, I mean. yeah. I don't know. I'm kind of tapped out now. I can't think of anything else. What have you been playing recently?
So I've been playing Dragon Age a lot.
Yeah, you've been enjoying that a lot, have you? Yeah,
I love that game. I'm on my second. Well, I started one playthrough. I got to about level 7 and started over. I completed the game on my next playthrough, and I've started a third playthrough.
Whoa!
I tried to go my complete playthrough. I played as a goody two shoes, you know, sort of fighter type, right?
Oh yeah, yeah.
And then
standard D&D.
Yeah.
Boilerplate,
very standard,
yeah.
And very goody two shoes. Always did the right, you know, what he thought was the right thing.
Yeah,
yada yada yada. So my next, so this playthrough, I decided to go to the opposite corner of the game.
Whoa!
And I'm playing a mage, and I'm not really role playing in the sense that I'm trying to project myself or get my character's motivations or anything like that. All I'm really trying to do is find the nastiest response from the dialogue tree. And give that for every time, right?
How are you finding that?
It's kind of hard, both internally to myself, because you do some rather nasty things at times, and also from a gameplay perspective. For instance, today I lost the first thief you get for the, you know, probably the first half of the game, the only thief that you're going to get, and so I'm not going to be opening many chests until I get another thief, because...
Oh, no.
She was a nice person, and I told her, basically, I don't want you around, and go away, because it was the nastiest thing I could say. So I kind of gimped my playthrough in that sense.
Oh.
Although, I mean, this playthrough is more for fun and for the experience rather than... I've already seen all the major cut pieces, right? Yeah. I already know how the story... The main... I know how it mainly ends. I don't know how the details will end on this one, which is that's kind of the point of the playthrough. But so I've done all the set pieces. I know how that goes. So I'm really in this one for the experience, the little character interactions that this game is so good at. You know, things of that nature, right? That's really why I'm here. So that's why I'm not really role-playing. This is not really a quote-unquote character. This is more of a... I'm trying to put people in just the opposite positions that I was in the first playthrough. So that's been quite fun.
To see what the designers have come up with in the game world.
Right, exactly. I'm trying to make sure I've mixed my characters up in ways that I did not could not do in the first playthrough. So that's been a lot of fun.
Mm.
And then I've been playing a lot of Left 4 Dead 2. I really love that game too.
Oh yeah.
I did not like the first game that much. I did not like Left 4 Dead.
Didn't you?
But for some reason this game... I can't put my finger on exactly what they did to make this game more enjoyable, but it is a lot more enjoyable for me.
Oh, okay.
Because on paper it looks like Left 4 Dead 2, right?
Plus.
Yeah. And then I play TF2 all the time, and I will probably play that for the next 5 years.
Yeah, as long as you keep updating it, and people keep playing.
Right. There's some things on the back. There's a couple of things on the back burner I'm going to get to at some point. But I'm about halfway through Risen.
Oh yeah.
That's pretty fun. It's hard.
Very
old school PC game from the makers of Gothic.
I want to get into that at some point.
Yeah. Someday I will get back to that because I do want to finish that off, or at least see some more of the world. It's pretty interesting world that it's in. And then, really, that's about it. What about you? What have you been playing?
Not much actually. I've been quite busy actually, trying to find a job and
right.
stuff. I've actually been picking up a few old games. I've been trying to get through basically my pile,
right,
as it were, my game pile. And I've got some of my own games and some of the games that my dad has been given but never played, because
right.
you know, he's a gamer too, and I buy him games I think he'd like, and he doesn't always play them. He plays old games instead.
Right.
So I played a bit of Tom Clancy's Rainbow Six Vegas.
I've never played that.
And so far it's been all right. I mean, it's a fairly old game. I think it was 2006 or 7 or something.
Right.
2006, yeah. And it's decent, actually. I mean, you have your three... There's you and two other guys, and you control them. You have basic controls, like, you know, go there, or, you know, follow me, your whole position. And you can, like, you've got, like, repelling and stuff like that in the game. So it's not so much tactical like the other Tom Clancy games
right.
have been. But no, it's quite good, and you have, you know, you're regenerating health as you do in most games these days. And like, when you get shot, when you get shot, it's quite interesting because your view becomes very pixelated,
uh-huh.
and it's really jarring. I mean, you can't if you get shot too much, you die anyway. Yeah. But as you get shot more and more, it becomes harder and harder to shoot the people who are shooting you because it's very difficult to see what's going on. And I suppose it's quite realistic in a sense,
right?
But it's really really jarring. It's like kind of, as you said before, you know, going from a 2009, you know, 1080p display to a 1981 VIC 20
right.
dots on the screen, and it's interesting. I'm not sure I particularly like it, so I try not to get hit.
Well, I guess that's the point, though, right?
Yeah. It's like it does kind of end up being one of those things where you're just like a normal human guy, but you're still soaking up all these damage, but just kind of shake it off after a second or so. But yeah,
that sounds cool. I wish I'd picked that. I wish I'd played that back in the day.
Yeah, I mean, it still runs on PC. I mean, I've got a 5-year-old PC and it runs pretty well on that. But apparently, someone was saying someone I was speaking to the other day saying that Vegas 2 is better. So I'll see if I can pick up that for cheap and get onto that after I play this one.
Cool.
I've been playing a bit of Drakensang, The Dark Eye. I don't know if you ever played that. Like an RPG.
Oh, yes, actually, that's another one I want to get back to.
Yeah, I kind of bear myself out. It's a really, really long game, actually.
Yes.
I must have put in about a month's worth of game time in it. I'm talking, like, you know, if you include about 8 hours every day. Because
right.
I started it back in March or April, played it for about a month or so, and then stopped playing it because it kind of got burned out on it. And then sort of picked it up again about a month ago and played it for about 10, 12 days pretty constantly. And I'm still, I don't know how far I'm into the game. I've got most of the kind of the goodies you pick up as you go through, if you know what I'm talking
right.
about.
Yep.
So I'm pretty far into it. I've only got one thing left to get, I think. And then I get the final thing you've been going for the whole
right.
time. But yeah, I just got burned out on it again. It's one of these things that I love the game, but sometimes it's just a bit too much.
Right.
And although I love longer games, I like a game of a certain length a bit better. You know what I mean? Maybe 30 hours or so, I think, is probably a good hours for me for an RPG.
Right.
Yeah. Well, not including side quests.
Right. Well, you just play this. Yeah. If you just play the main quest through, yeah, I think that's about a good length. Yeah, that's one the reason why I kind of set that aside was it was very, very long. And also I had restarted because that was a game, again, like we had kind of talked about earlier on the podcast, where I did about a 7-hour playthrough, discovered that I finally started to understand what all those little abbreviations stood for, really.
Oh, yeah.
And then started a new, you know, made a new character and made more intelligent choices when I leveled up.
Yeah, because this is difficult, because it's a completely alien system to people outside of Germany, really, isn't
right,
it?
Yes. Yes, and I think I posted somewhere on some forum, somebody was asking a question about it, and I said, you think you know what these stats really mean, but you don't know what these stats really mean. You need to really read the descriptions, and then also maybe go find a wiki on the internet, and just to get understanding what all the statistics mean, because there's a lot of statistics, and they don't affect your combat, for instance, the same way that a D&D based game will.
No, right? It's like if you put in +1 to your agility, it doesn't necessarily mean you're gonna be harder to hit.
Right, exactly. And so my first playthrough was I was playing it like that and kind of made some bad mistakes.
Yeah, I think that's one of the things that I'm missing from a lot of RPG games. I know it's like an easy button, and I know it's been modded into Dragon Age. But people don't re-roll the characters.
Right.
Re-roll their abilities and the points and stuff. But in things like action RPGs, like Titan Quest and Diablo, well, maybe not Diablo, but other ones, and obviously in MMOs as well, you often have the ability to pay to have your ability points reassigned to different things.
Right. Right. Yeah, that respect capability. I don't know how much in favor of it I am, but because it does kind of break the "this is your character, this is how he is" sort of mentality. But on the other hand, yes, it does kind of help you overcome that gamey learning curve, if you will.
Yeah, especially when you're not. It's in this. Cause I mean, I picked in Drakensang. I just stupidly picked one of the classes. I think I can't remember now. It's one of the ones where you're kind of a sort of thief, but you have magic as well.
Right. Yes.
And there's about 3 or 4 different characters who are actually that class
right.
in the game,
yes.
who are your henchmen. So, like, the guy, Dranor, and the girl who's, like, a thief. They both basically have the same stats. So I've ended up having a really weird kind of squad.
Right.
I've got the Amazon as my tank with a saber.
Right.
And then I've got 3 guys with rapiers. All going around, 2 of them with magic and one of them as a kind of pseudo tank and the other 2 with like healing and attack magic. But yeah, I've adapted. I mean, I didn't respec or cheat or anything, but yeah, I managed to sort of fudge my way into a decent squad of
right.
people. But it could have easily gone down really, really badly.
Yeah, and mine was at a point where I was trying to make a tank, but I didn't understand how everything worked together, so it ended up being I ended up having a character that just was basically intractable, right? I mean,
yeah,
he wasn't much of a tank, and he couldn't do very much damage, and so that Amazon ended up being instead of being the off-tank, it ended up being the tank, and my character ended up being basically useless, and I didn't want to play it that way, so I ended up restarting, which I don't really like to do,
yeah.
but... You know, sometimes you got to do what you got to do.
Yeah, especially if you don't want to spend like too long getting to that point, do you? Like, you'd rather the developers make it so obvious that, you know, if you're going to spend, as you say, 7 hours, that's not too bad. You've already spent 20 or 30 or something, then you think, I'm not going to go back to this game.
Right, then you'll just let it, yeah, then you'll never do it. never go back. It'll just sit on your shelf forever and be on the pile.
Yeah. Kind of like that way with Oblivion. I've played that about 3 times. I've never done much of the main quest. I managed to do about 60 hours each of the 3 times. And then I've just lost interest. I love the game world, but just like certain niggles that make me want to just kind of kill it a little bit.
No, I understand. Yeah, that's definitely a game that I love the game. I probably put 150, 200 hours in it, but there were a lot of things you had to kind of overlook in order to get a lot of enjoyment out of it.
Yeah. Yeah. I think one of the things, one of the big problems I have with a lot of video games is the logic that they use. They chop and change whether they're using their own logic or real world logic or whatever, and sometimes it's, as using your word of the day before, it's incongruous with itself.
Right.
Like I was playing, just to shift to a different genre here. I was playing Crysis not so long ago, and I think it's quite a good game actually. I actually preferred it towards the end. I hope it's not really a spoiler anymore because I mean it's been out for a couple of years now, where you start to fight the aliens.
Right.
And I thought that the game got tighter and kind of better, more focused and better balanced towards the end. But in like the kind of cutscenes you watch, your character's doing all these things where he's running around, throwing people in the air and punching them and shooting them and absorbing loads of shots and stuff like that. You try and do that in the game.
Right.
You die. Right. You can't do it.
Right.
And it's like, well, who made these cutscenes?
Well, I think... That kind of leads to a pet peeve of mine with games where I want to do that cool stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
Definitely. I don't want somebody to do that in the cutscene. I want to be able to do that stuff. If you can't do it in the game, please don't put it in the cutscene, right?
Mm, yeah, yeah.
I mean, it might be all cool and cinematic, but let the player do that stuff.
I think a good next step in kind of game making, you know how you were saying before about the three-act system or whatever in other media, it'd be nice to have reactionary or reactions from NPCs more. So as you're playing through the cutscene, if you do certain things, that becomes then the story.
Right.
I mean, obviously that is a big technical hurdle, apart from the fact of, you know, recording people's voices and, you know, and having some kind of dynamic reaction system. But I mean, it sort of got that way with I suppose Mass Effect a little bit, didn't it?
Yes.
Did you play that game?
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, I loved the way, you know. Okay, sometimes it wasn't great, and your characters would just stand there, and they'd be a bit implacable in the face of different events going on. But quite often, when they were interacting in the cutscenes and in the way you were talking with the other characters, you know, there would be real kind of not so much chemistry, but a good quality of interaction between the different NPCs and your character.
Right, and Dragon Age does that to a much larger degree, right? They really taken that from Mass Effect, you know, it really pumped it up.
Mm. Yeah. Well, that's cool. I'll definitely pick that up at some point in the future.
I'm going to be a maven and highly recommend it.
Yeah, unfortunately, I need a new PC before I get that game, unfortunately. But, on the positive side, it'd be cheaper when I buy it.
Sure. Well, I don't know. I mean, I've heard that people have been able to run it on... did you play Mass Effect on the 360 or on the PC?
On the 360.
Oh, okay, alright.
Yeah, no, I can't play it on my PC. I've only got a single core.
Oh, okay.
It's a 3 gig Pentium 4, right. So... My graphics card's fine. It can run most games, but my single core struggles.
Right. I hear ya.
Yeah, but apart from that, I've not been playing many games, actually. I've just been to my sister's this afternoon. She's lent me 2 of her 360 games, Assassin's Creed 2 and Batman Arkham Asylum as well. So I'll be playing through them in the near future.
Oh, that's cool. Those are both games I'm interested in. Batman more so than Assassin's Creed 2.
Hmm. Did you play the first one?
I tried to. That was probably the tipping point where I decided that I can't play console games of that sort.
I remember the same before.
But it looked cool, and I was also cognizant of some of the complaints against the game where if you play too much of it, there's too much repetition. So I had it planned out where I was only going to play a couple hours of the sitting and just you know, however long it's going to take, that was okay. And I just, the more I played it, the more I'm like, I just, this should be fluid and should flow, and it does not. And
you just couldn't quite get there.
Yeah, just it was just more frustrating than anything else, and I just never really was able to pick up on it. So, done. Back to my man cave and my
PC. Fair enough. That's the thing, though, isn't it? It's like, you know, you have so many games. Why waste your time playing a game which you're not going to get the full enjoyment
out of? Exactly. That's exactly right. I don't have enough time really to play the games I want to play. If a game is frustrating, I hate being this way, but I'm just going to move on down the road because, my gaming time is pretty precious to me, and I'm not going to bang my head against the wall for very long before I go down the road.
That's fair enough. I think possibly now is a good time to wrap up.
All right, sir.
Okay, so it's bye from me, it's bye from James, and
bye from Taylor.
See you all next time.
Y'all have fun.